Good morning. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I call this meeting of the committee to order. It's being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual meetings of this type. I want to direct the attention of members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find meeting materials, an agenda, a lot of things on there, so check that out. And we'll begin by having the clerk take the roll. Mr. Doslin, if you can do that.
Morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney, present.
Representative Damath.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, present.
Representative Cotiza Watun.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Representative Wazlowick.
Wazlowick, present.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Representative Wolgamott, present.
Thank you. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Doslin. Representative Pryor, if you can move approval of our minutes from March 24th.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Any additions or corrections, members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any motion passes? The March 24th minutes are approved. So members, we have a pretty jam-packed schedule today. We'll need to, I guess I'll ask testifiers to keep things fairly tight if you can. I think we're going to build in enough time for questions. I'm trying to do that. And so I'm hoping that this should work out okay. And we'll just keep in touch with each other and make it work. I think it'll be okay. We're going to start by having a guest, Representative Lippert. So glad to have you with the committee. And we're going to have Vice Chair Pryor, if you could please move that House File 4120 be re-referred to the Agriculture Committee.
Yes, I move House File 4120 to be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Finance, and Policy.
Thank you so much. And we received this bill from that committee. I think it had unanimous support there and delighted to hear it. So Representative Lippert, please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Good morning, members. The state has a farm to school program through the Department of Agriculture that provides grants to schools so they can contract with local farmers for vegetables, fruits, and meats for lunches and breakfasts. This program provides students with fruits and vegetables that are as fresh and flavorful as they can possibly be, and as nutritious as they can possibly be too. Children and youth are more likely to eat fruits and vegetables when they're fresh, when they taste like they're supposed to, and haven't been shipped across the country, but have been shipped just down the road. These fresh fruits and vegetables can shape a child's tastes and preferences for the future. It's a program that's good for students and our schools. It's also very good for local farmers. One community-supported agriculture farm in my area was able to triple their business due to farm to school because they had a market for carrots and squash through the fall, winter, and spring. This bill expands the farm to school program to include early learning and child care providers too, allowing early learning centers for our youngest children to have access to the healthiest, most flavorful meats, fruits, and vegetables possible. With me to testify today is Jamie Mirokala, the Child Nutrition Services Manager at Tri-Valley Head Start in Crookston, Minnesota.
Wonderful. And so thank you so much, Representative Lippert. And Ms. Rokala, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. And again, I'll ask you to keep it fairly brief, but so glad to have you here. I can't hear you, but.
Can you hear me fine?
Oh, there we go. Yes. Okay. Can hear you now. Yeah, please. Yeah, great.
Good morning, Chair Pinto and members of the committee. My name is Jamie Rokala, and I'm the Child Nutrition Services Manager for Tri-Valley Opportunity Council. Tri-Valley is a community agency headquartered in Crookston, Minnesota, with Head Start, Early Head Start, and Migrant and Seasonal Head Start programs located in 15 locations throughout the state, from all the way up to East Grand Forks, Minnesota, all the way down to northern southern Minnesota, like Elgin, Winnebago, Sleepy Eye, and the southern regions. At Tri-Valley, we serve over 1,000 families and children ages 0 to 5. Tri-Valley has been incorporating farm to early care in classrooms and family engagement activities since 2016. The Child Nutrition Services Department uses a curriculum that I created by myself with the help of some of my coworkers. The purpose was to implement a curriculum structured for children in the migrant and seasonal Head Start setting, as well as other early care settings, and to incorporate farm to early care objectives that would allow for the procurement of local foods, which would be incorporated into our menus, customize the curriculum to work with the Minnesota growing season, and then that would also coincide with Head Start performance standards. Speaking nationally on farm to early care, I found that there are many great curriculums to incorporate into programs, but there was a barrier that program funds aren't able to support the cost of these curriculums. So early care settings have a hard time purchasing educational materials to help enhance and implement farm to early care within early care programs. I serve on the Minnesota Farm to Early Care Advisory Group, and there was a tremendous response to the Farm to Early Care mini grant program that was piloted, supported through the Association of State Public Health Nutritionists grant. I reviewed multiple applications from early cares throughout the state of Minnesota, and the interest and ideas revolving around farm to early care really blew me away. The large applicant pool really solidified the huge interest in local purchasing from the early care sector. According to the CDC, childhood obesity affects 1 in 4 children between the ages of 2 and 5, with approximately 60% of those children being in a non-parental care arrangement. Early care education settings are one of the best places to reach young children with obesity prevention efforts. My goal as a child nutrition professional has been to advocate for these children and families by improving the early care and education environment. Food insecurity and food access, especially in rural Minnesota, is an issue and a key contributor to unhealthy lifestyles seen in children and family. Nutrition education and early intervention of healthy foods at an early age plays a key role in early prevention of childhood obesity. We have noticed a positive effect on families and children that we serve by incorporating farm to early care initiatives within our program. In fact, we have been seeing an improvement in height and weight and a decrease in BMI in children that Tri-Valley serves in our Region 5 Head Start centers. In 2018-2019, 31% of children in our Region 5 program were considered overweight or obese. And at the end of the season, there was a 26% improvement. In 2020-2021, 44% of children were considered overweight or obese, and there was a 38% improvement. And now this year, we are seeing 22% of children overweight or obese. And so I believe that these results are really due to the implementation of fresh produce and nutrition education activities within the classroom to the children and to the parents.
If Ms. Rocha, if I could ask you to wrap up pretty quick here.
Yes, I can. I just want to add in that good nutrition does really help prepare students for learning and in their environments. I believe that early care facilities can really directly influence the children that we serve. And so I would very much appreciate everyone's support in this inclusion.
Thank you, Ms. Rogla. Thank you so much. Thanks for your important work. I have to say those percentage decreases in obesity are just incredible. That's just wonderful. Yeah, thank you for your work. So members' questions, and just a reminder, we will have a vote on this very shortly. Any questions for Representative Lippers? Seems like a pretty amazing win-win-win, especially for a state that where agriculture is as important as it is in Minnesota. So just looking to see. I am not seeing any hand. Well, Representative Bennett, there we go.
Right about that, Mr. Chair. I was trying to find the right button here.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, and I do have a question for the bill author. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lippert, how much of this is ongoing in the base then? We have one-time spending, obviously, and then how much will be ongoing?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bennett. So it's we're asking to double what's in the base to $1.6 million. We've had demand that is that's exceeded what's there now. This program is steadily growing, and so what we're asking for is what's we think will meet demand, and we expect that demand is just going to keep growing, especially as we're expanding the child care centers too.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm good. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, any members, any questions for Representative Lippert? Not seeing any. So Representative Lippert, you get the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're seeing great results with the farm school program. We heard about that, and there's a great demand to expanding this to intentionally reach childcare centers is just the right thing to do. So I ask for your support.
Thank you so much, Representative Lippert. And again, yeah, pretty amazing win-win-win. How great for our kids and for our farmers and for all of us. So Mr. Dozen, if you can please take the roll. Oh, actually, pardon me. Sorry, hold on one moment. Representative Pryor renews her motion. That House file, I believe we've got 4120, yes, is re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Finance, and Policy. And with that, Mr. Dozen, if you can take the roll. Thanks. Oh, you're muted, Mr. Dozen.
Actually, it looks like he was frozen.
Yeah. I don't know if I've had a backup clerk before on a committee. there's backup chairs. I don't know if that's Ms. Breck. Perhaps you could step in for Mr. Dozlov if you don't mind.
Yes, I can do that.
Thank you.
Oh, it looks like he's rejoining right now. Maybe that'll work.
Okay.
Better.
We'll see if it can. Yeah. I've not had that happen before.
All right. I made it back. Okay. Sorry about that.
Welcome back, Mr. Dozen. No problem. So we're ready to have you take the role.
Wonderful. Chair Pinto.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pryor.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
Aye.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Representative Daymuth.
Aye.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Representative Cotiza-Watu.
Aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz, aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Aye.
The vote results in 11 ayes and 2 noes.
With a vote of 11 to 2, the motion passes. And Representative Lippert, your bill is on its way. And many thanks to you for this. And again, to Ms. Rokola. Appreciate having you here. Take care.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. Representative Herr, we are so glad to have you with us. Representative Pryor, if you can move that House File 4555 be brought before the committee.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that. And members, the plan for this bill is to lay it over for possible inclusion in a budget bill, just so we're all on the same page. Representative Herr, again, welcome to you. Glad to have you. And please, if you can present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate you making time to hear House File 4555 today. This bill supports the Children's Asset Building Program in St. Paul. Children's Asset Building Programs are sweeping the nation. At the end of 2021, 62 CSA programs are currently serving children in 35 states and the District of Columbia, reaching 456,000 children. States like Maine, Pennsylvania, and Oklahoma have made seed deposits into college savings accounts at birth. The research shows two tremendous impacts in early childhood when a child has an asset building account starting in the early years of life. Decreased symptoms of maternal depression with an effect size greater on mothers with lower income and education, and an increased children's social emotional functioning with similar effect size to early Head Start. It was for these reasons that the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation, the City of St. Paul, and community partners launched their own children's asset building program, College Bound St. Paul, in 2020. This committee and the legislature supported the startup cost for the St. Paul program with $500,000 during the 2019 session. Since then, the St. Paul program has over 7,000 children enrolled, netted over $800,000 in savings from seed deposit milestones, earnings, and family savings. The average account size is $119, which is $69 above the initial $50 seed deposit. The largest accounts are now over $2,000, just 2 years into this program. The St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation, City of St. Paul, and community partners want to build on this success. This bill includes an appropriation for $1 million to enroll new participants, continue to grow accounts for existing participants, and expand financial health programming so families learn to maximize their investment. Like most early childhood investments, this is a great return on investment for taxpayers. In the long run, research in the University of Michigan shows that low and moderate income children whose family saved $500 or less are three times more likely to attend college and four times more likely to graduate with those whose families have not saved than those whose families did not save. There is no better foundation to give a child. I do want to note that when the city came to the legislature back in 2020, the request was for a pilot program. In that time, the city has worked diligently in engaging cities from across Minnesota and sharing their learnings with them. Cities such as Rochester, St. Cloud, Northfield, Grand Rapids, and Windham have interest in this program. The pandemic created challenges that cities could not have anticipated. Interested cities are still working and gathering local support. In order to provide the necessary time to enact the program, it's important that St. Paul continue its work and continue gathering learnings and lessons. This is the end of my remarks, Mr. Chair. I do have one testifier on the bill. With your permission, I would like to yield the rest of the time to Munir Karcher-Ramos, City of St. Paul Director of the Office of Financial Empowerment.
Thank you, Representative Herr. And yeah, Mr. Karcher-Ramos, welcome to you. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Munir Karcher-Ramos, Director of the Office of Financial Empowerment. I'm here representing the public-private partnership led by the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation and the City of St. Paul. The first 2 years of our children's asset building program have taught us a lot and informed why we believe the state should continue to deepen its investment. So the first thing we've learned is families tell us that they find great value in their asset building accounts for their children, that they believe this investment in early childhood sets their children up for the pathway to college and increases their aspirations for college, their parental aspirations for their children to go to college, and that more children should have accounts opened. As Representative shared, over 7,000 children have accounts in the state. By making this investment, can support the opening of more accounts for more children, leading to over 12,000 children who would then have accounts over this grant period. The second thing we've learned is that families want to build the size of their accounts, and match savings and incentives have been a powerful tool to increase the amount of funds in their account. As Representative Herr cited, families have earned $69 above the initial $50 deposit with an average of $119 in their accounts, and that the state, by making this investment, can help these accounts build and grow and encourage deeper engagement with the program through milestone earnings as well as matches for family savings. The third thing we learned is that families have found great value in financial health program offerings like Money Action Day, right, which is financial literacy, housing, financing, counseling, as well as other types of, you know, financial health programming that are good matches with this type of asset building program. And the state, by making this investment, can help scale the reach of that financial health programming so families can not only maximize their accounts, but also their capacity and their overall financial capability, leading to stronger and more financially healthy communities. As Representative Herr said, is that there's been a lot of outreach and engagement with cities across Minnesota, particularly by the Midwest CSA Coalition, which is run by Heartland Alliance out of Illinois and Indiana Youth Institute out of Indianapolis. And different informational events, you know, have been hosted in and for folks across Minnesota. There is a flyer on the record with the link to sort of the webinar where folks such as United Way of Central Minnesota, the Northfield Promise, Youth Prize, among others, you know, were co-hosted, and we've seen, you know, stakeholders from all over the state who've been showing interest. Right now, I think this is a question of readiness and not interest for those greater Minnesota sites as they've shared them sort of recentering their efforts and energy in response to the pandemic. And right now they're readying themselves for continued exploration of children's asset building accounts in their locales. There's also a letter from the St. Paul Minnesota Foundation on record who said they would be open, you know, when these other localities are ready to support, you know, granting funds to them. For now, St. Paul remains ready and the focus is still in front of you here today. So with that said, I conclude my testimony, ask you to support House File 4555, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Karcher-Ramos. Members, I should note that I've budgeted a little more time for this bill, thinking that there may be some questions. So just in terms of, I know we have a bunch of bills today, but I did want to make sure we have enough time for each of the bills and think that we do for this one. So folks have questions. Why don't we move to that? So please raise hands if you do. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, what is the current, the funding would obviously be going to help post-secondary education. What is the current graduation rate of the St. Paul school system?
Mr. Carcharamos, you may know, or Representative Herr may know, I previously worked with the school district, may not have that number off the top of anybody's minds, though. Now, Mr. Okay. Carcharamos, looks like you're unmuted.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the St. Paul Public Schools, graduation rate at Central High School, for example, I don't have the overall rate, I just know my own local high school in my neighborhood, which is about 70% within 4 years, and I believe it was 85% within 5 years, and that this program as well is for any type of supporting post-secondary, so that could be a certificate program at a community college or a workforce program, you know, not just go to 2-year and 4-year colleges. So the reach is, you know, still tremendous for even those who don't complete high school.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you. I was you know, a little skeptical of this program a couple of years ago when we first broke it out, and just from the workability of it, not necessarily the goals. I mean, I appreciate the goals of it, but just the workability of a program like this. And I guess my opinion would be perhaps focusing on getting those graduation rates up might be a better use of money than putting this money into these accounts for the individuals. So that's just my opinion, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Juergens. I think I think research would show that the two are actually connected. I see Representative mm-hmm. Herr is unmuted, so I'll call on her. So Representative Herr, if you can please provide thoughts on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Juergens. Actually, I just wanted to add that the in MDE released a report on June 10th of 2021. St. Paul Public School class of 2020 reached a 78.3% graduation rate, and that's a 2% increase from 2019. Which is actually a really great accomplishment considering the pandemic and what we've been in. And they continue to make progress in that, but Representative Chair Pinto is correct that children, if they're gonna be more likely to go to college, they're also, it's tied to their ability to graduate from high school as well. And so this is initiatives really from birth all the way to when we set up college savings accounts. It's actually an initiative from the minute that child is born until that child graduates. So it's all tied together.
Yeah, I guess I had thought, Representative Herr, that you know, the research shows that even having a small amount in the bank account, because there was some criticism saying, boy, if you put just a small amount to begin with, it's going to make that much difference in, you know, the 18 years child going to college. But it gives the family and the child a goal and a sense of forward momentum. But actually, I think research shows increases graduation rates just doing this, to Representative Juergens' point. I don't know if you were, or Representative Juergens, or no, Mr. Carcharamos, I guess you were going to jump in. I'm not sure who just spoke, Mr. Representative Juergens.
That was me, yeah. Mr. Well, Chair. Please, and I just want to say, thank you. I just want to say if the graduation rate increased 2% to 78%, especially like you said, Representative Herr, during the COVID years, that's tremendous. And I applaud that. But it still shows there's a ways to go. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I don't know if Mr. Carcharamos or Representative Herr can comment on what I had asked about that having funds in a college savings account such as this can actually help to increase graduation rates for kids. I guess I thought there was research that said that, but I may be wrong about that. Mr. Carcharamos, can you comment on that? Yeah,
I mean, the research base, you know, in a summary by Prosperity Now, you know, will show that those who do have, you know, these children asset building accounts, you know, do have an increased likelihood of high school graduation and then ultimately enrolling in college. So that is correct.
Okay, so there's a connection there. Okay, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's good to hear this bill again. not only it's good to hear kind of the updates of how things are going, but also to hear, you know, again, how we can use this idea and use this program to roll out to other parts of our state right now. And so we really appreciate that St. Paul has taken the initiative and put all this energy behind it. What I find most compelling about this bill is that we're really addressing two generations. And I think what we find in our research, we find from, you know, understanding programs and policies that we promote as a state, is that we really do have to touch both generations. So it's the family and the parent that see security in their life, but also see that future for their children, that really has the strongest impact on the child. And I think this does acknowledge that that parents are important, and that there's a way to support parents as they raise their children, especially parents that are most vulnerable right now in Minnesota. And so I would like to hear a little bit more about how other cities are getting interested in it. And I understand, though, you know, that data and the burden that is to not just be trying to run your own program, but try to launch it in a way that others can learn from. So, and I think we got some of those details, but, you know, I think, you know, this would be a time maybe we can hear a little bit more about how this is rolling out to other cities in Minnesota.
So, yeah, and that, of course, that was the original funding, was to help them be able to expand this statewide. So, yeah, if you could, Mr. Cartier-Ramos, perhaps you're the right person, if you could please talk about where things are at with that piece of it.
Thanks, Chair Pinto and Representative. So in terms of other cities and municipalities and communities, this is both sort of local kind of United Ways, community foundations, organizations like the Minnesota Youth Coordinating Board, you know, who are showing, you know, different levels of interest in this. We've done with the Midwest CSA Consortium, have, you know, met with, you know, stakeholders in Northfield. Particularly, there was an organization, Northfield, like Healthy Communities Initiative, and met with a number of their kind of stakeholders table, including parents, again, who were interested in Rochester, included folks such as folks from the Mayo Clinic, the local kind of Cramps Career Initiative there, included the mayor, you know, of Rochester. In St. Cloud, was with a convening of folks from the United Way of Central Minnesota, you know, who are all kind of showing interest in this. In fact, we have another webinar actually today. We have folks signed up from Forest Lake, St. Louis Park, Brainerd, Minnesota, Minneapolis, a number of other kind of communities. So I think folks are right now sort of readying themselves and thinking through, you know, sort of this expansion of children asset building, you know, programs seriously. And I think, again, with the sort of emphasis on the pandemic in the past few years, as we rolled out our program, you know, folks are, you know, sort of in the engagement process and sort of have a line of sight to what this might mean for their communities at this time.
Thank you. So not seeing other hands up, I'll just note maybe just a little bit of homework for you, Mr. Cartier-Ramos, and your team, if we were to move this forward, because these are state dollars with the hope of giving other communities opportunities as well. And so I guess I might ask you, if we were to move forward with this, it'd be good to see that support from other communities. You mentioned that, but there may be something folks can provide input, et cetera. And especially as I look at the bill, I remember previously we had said that you provide a report for expanding statewide, and the city did do that. Members, I believe that we all received that. But if you can just think about, are there ways that if we were to do this funding to be able to use it to further support allowing other communities to have access to this, I think that'd be something that I would certainly be interested in. I suspect other committee members would as well. So that may be something you could work on in the coming days before we would come back with our budget bill next week. And again, consider this for that. So a little bit of homework for you and your team. Not seeing other hands, so Representative Herr, we'll give you the last word.
Thank you, Chair Pinto and committee, for hearing this bill. I do just want to say really quick, I know Representative Juergens mentioned, you know, and specific asked about St. Paul's graduation rate, but I would just like to remind the committee that the state's graduation rate is 83.8%, according to MDE. St. St. Paul's is 78.3%, and though they're a couple percentage lower, the entire state could use a higher graduation rate. This is not an issue of St. Paul or the state. This is really an issue about our children across the state, and that we do know that with if a child has a child has a CSA, they're four times more likely to graduate, which means that would impact graduation rate. And the more investments we can put in our children across the state, the better it'll be for our entire state to increase that graduation rate. And so if that's what we're looking for to achieve, then investing in the CSA is one of the best ways to do that. So I thank the committee for your time, and I hope for support of this bill and for inclusion into your report, committee report.
Thank you,
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr, and thank you, Mr. Karcher-Ramos. Really exciting. I got to go on the very first day when the family's baby was being born and having this opportunity, and it was just tremendously exciting day, of course, new baby, and knowing the community is rallying around, really exciting. So thank you so much. So with that, the chair lays over House File 4555 for possible inclusion in a budget bill. And we have another bill coming up that has same thing, will be laid over for possible inclusion, House File 4593. And Representative Bamuth, I'll invite you to move to bring that bill before us.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. And I'll note this bill relates to the Family Child Care Provider Ombudsperson, which we've funded. I know Representative Damuth had championed that. Representative Wozniak had co-chaired the task force that passed through. And my understanding is that we are likely to be getting good news in the coming days about Ombudsperson finally being appointed. I'd sort of heard that, and I'm hoping then that we'll be getting more details in the coming days. So just a bit of news to share with the committee. But with that, Representative Damuth, I'll allow you to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for hearing House File 4593. The first 2021 first special session law, Chapter 7, Article 2, Section 3, establishes an ombudsperson for child care providers to assist providers with licensing, compliance, and other issues. This position, Mr. Chair, as you mentioned, was one of the recommendations that came out of the Family Child Care Task Force, which I had the privilege of serving on and was co-chaired by Representative Wozniak. In addition to assisting child care providers, this position will provide recommendations on child care improvement or education and provide an annual report. To assure a level of independence, we empowered the ombudsperson to act independently of the Department of Human Services, including providing uncensored testimony before the legislature. As you mentioned, Mr. Chair, it sounds like, ironically, there's going to be some good news coming out, but this position is to be appointed by the governor to serve a four-year term, which may be renewed and is subject to removal for cause. This is not a Senate confirmable position. Additionally, this position was funded using $499,000 of federal coronavirus relief funds, which under federal guidance must be expended by September 30th, 2024. So there are two issues that my bill would address. First, as we close the book on March 2022, and this year is flying by, a position created by the legislature in June of 2021 and effective July 1st, 2021, does still remain open to the best of our knowledge, but it sounds like there might be some information or something changing soon. Best information that we have is the governor is close to making that appointment, which will come at least 9 months after first being authorized. This does send a terrible signal by the administration that they continue to fail to take seriously the needs of our family child care providers. We know that family child care providers must remain in that bedrock of any long-term child care solution. We just can't let them stand back and watch them suffer the indignity of just being an afterthought. Second, this bill, the funding for this position currently relies on one-time federal coronavirus relief funding, which expires in 2024, as I mentioned. Therefore, even if an appointment is made soon, the first appointment would serve only until April of 2026, but it's only funded for 2 years. So anyone that would actually accept that appointment would be asked to take a leap of faith that their salary would at least be paid for the duration of that first term. The bill does not go as far as to direct the governor to make an appointment by a certain date. It does set when the first term would expire, which is proposed to be December 31st, 2024. Without this guardrail, the first term will expire 4 years after the first appointment is made. For example, if the appointment is made April of 2022, the first term expires April 2026, and then future terms would follow that time frame. This bill would clarify that the first term for the ombudsperson would end on December 31st, 2024, which would establish the four-year cycle beginning January 1st, and essentially in the middle of a governor's four-year term. First, this avoids a new ombudsperson starting during a legislative session. And second, it allows the ombudsperson to remain focused on their work during a potential gubernatorial transition and appointments of new commissioners. The bill also assures that funding for the position would continue beyond the expiration of the one-time federal COVID relief funds, but avoids a general fund obligation in using federal child care development block grant funds. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have a testifier.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. Just before we move to that, I guess I'll just say that I do take strong exception to some of the comments you made about the administration and family child care. And I'll note, although it's been a number of months since that was authorized and appointed, and as you know, there've been all kinds of things that have been extremely slowed down. And I don't know that, in any case, we can have a separate discussion about that. I'll just, I would strongly disagree with you about some of those aspects. And that may be a conversation for a debate for another time. For now, we're focused on this. But we'll turn to Ms. Cunningham. And so Ms. Cunningham, if you can please identify yourself, so glad to have you back. I will ask you to make sure to keep your comments fairly brief, but so glad to have you. Please proceed.
Thank you. We might get some noise in the background here because I am a provider in St. Paul of 26 years. I'm also the public policy chair for MCPIN, which is the 501c3 state association. I'm testifying in support of this bill. It fixed all of what has been mentioned by Representative Damuth. And I understand the perspective of the good faith statement as a provider and as a leader for years and working with providers in the state. This has been a very long process. I was screened for the position mid-December. I was not interviewed. I would have expected that there was more action sooner than this. I receive almost daily emails and phone calls from providers and counties, that the counties need help. They don't know where to go. I'm glad to provide service and support for them, but it is frustrating when they're supposed to be someone. It's going to take time for anyone to get up to speed to really understand, depending on who's chosen. And so the extension of this with the lack of interruption and being able to get to know what this is actually gonna take is incredibly important to do. This position must be supported to show that ongoing provider connection and to have someone for us to mediate, to integrate, to connect with us, with DHS, to get the answers that we need, because they are difficult to come to. I repeatedly asked DHS for information or for corrections, and I don't have enough bandwidth, enough time, effort, or connection, because I am a provider, to be able to evidently get DHS to respond and act accordingly to some of our requests. So this needs funded, it needs continued, and it needs acted on quickly. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Cunningham, and thank you for all of your work. And you've been with us before, and glad to have you. So members, questions to the bill. And I'll maybe ask one thing, Representative Damuth. In section two, the funding coming out of the federal dollars, is there a reason that you would do that as opposed to, I guess this seems like it's a very important thing. So sort of why wouldn't we spend state dollars and make that happen? I see your hand is raised, Representative Juergens. So I'll finish my question and call on you. But Representative Damuth, if you could just talk about that aspect of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I think it is important, as we have agreed and we've talked about, the importance of making sure that our family child care providers are set up for success and can continue in their industry. By taking the money from the child care development block grant, we know that that's federal money and that would not have a direct negative impact on our general fund, we would know that that money is continued. We could in the future look at taking it from the general fund, but I wouldn't want that to be something that could cause us to lose the needed position. So taking it from the federal funds would be a way to ensure it ongoing.
Okay, maybe just a quick follow-up. The bill is set up that we'd have to get permission from the federal government even to spend those federal dollars, which of course we wouldn't need in the state dollars. But I gather from your perspective, it's sort of worth it to go that route in order to avoid the squeeze on the general fund dollars, even though the federal dollars, you know, is not actually, they're not necessarily intended for this. We have to kind of get a special permission to be able to do that. You just comment on that, Representative Taylor.
Yes, and I appreciate the thought. Knowing that we started this position being funded with federal funds is also my thinking behind it of why we would continue to do so.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but Vice Chair Pryor had her hand up before me if she still has a question.
I don't know that I saw it get raised, in fact. Yeah, so that may have been left over or something. So Representative Juergens.
Okay. Just a quick question that I might have missed it, and maybe somebody from the administration is on, but to shed some light on why this position hasn't been filled yet and maybe a time frame of what their expectations are.
Yeah, we can have somebody come on. I will note, Representative Juergens, I feel like in past hearings, the conversation has been that, I see Ms. Sommerfeld, and so Ms. Sommerfeld, I think you shared some of this with us previously, but I'll let you jump on in. So please identify yourself and then proceed.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I am not involved in the process. I will just reiterate, though, what Representative Pinto said, that we are expecting that this position will be selected and announced very shortly. But as Representative Pinto said, it's taken time for us to get through processes and a variety of issues this year.
As I recall, Representative Juergens, and Ms. Sommerfeld, please confirm this or refute this, that although we put a lot of money into various things, including this last spring, one thing we didn't put funding into was sort of the infrastructure to support filling all those positions. So you've got to have the contracting and legal and various things. And so it's the whole, you know, Python situation, right? Where it swallows an elephant. And it takes a while to be able to digest the elephant, and we didn't make the Python bigger. And I feel like this metaphor is getting really strained, but Ms. Sommerfeld, am I sort of describing that somewhat accurately?
Yes, at least from the perspective of DHS. Of course, we are not responsible for appointing this position, right? That will be the governor's office. But yes, this last year has been challenging with managing an influx of public dollars and filling positions and things that we needed because we did not beef up staff or contracting HR, those things.
And you probably don't want to be thought of as a Python either, I suppose. DHS does not.
I do not want to be thought of as a Python,
We'll get that out of our heads. Okay. So I think, but I know that this has been true in a number of areas. I guess that's where I was disagreeing with. Again, and I know this will be an ongoing debate we all have in other settings, but where I was disagreeing with the characterization about the administration regarding family child care, because this has been just true in a number of areas. It's not specific to this, and it's the Python situation as far as I can tell. And again, we can debate that as a committee over time, but we'll see if there are other questions. I had some, just one other thing I was going to ask Representative Damek, which is in your opening remarks you commented about the concern that if the money runs out in late 2024, that would cause someone who takes the job to say, boy, the funding is only available for the first 2 years. That causes them to be concerned. I will note under section one of your bill, the person would lose their job in December of 2024, so late 2024. They could be reappointed, of course. But it feels like there's a slight contradiction there. If you can just help me understand how to think about those points together. If you can understand, yeah, please.
Yep, we know that we only have that federal funding that has to be spent by the by September 30th, 2024. So by putting the date in of the end of December, we are guaranteeing then by either general fund dollars, if that's what would be done, my preference again would be those federal dollars. We're guaranteeing that next appointment piece would be funded. Right now, we only have 2 years of funding, even if we do the full 4 years, and that is of concern. That's something that I hadn't realized until we came back into session and we're looking through all the details. So.
Okay. Representative Wasilewicz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to also sort of lend my support to the comments that you made about state investment. I think there's no better way for the state and the administration to show that we support family child care providers in this position than by putting state dollars in to fund this position. I also just, you know, want to point out that there are several things that are in the governor's budget to specifically support family child care providers, additional funding for the shared services network, the one-stop shop resource, and lots of other funding pieces in there. So I do think this is an important position. I appreciate the work that Representative Damuth has done on this, but I do think that I would like to see the state invest in this. I think if we want to show family child care providers that we support them, I don't think there's any better way than for us to actually put our money where our mouth is and say we're going to fund this position, and we're going to make sure that it's an important piece of what the state's doing. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And we'll be making budget decisions soon enough. I guess I will note that when you spend general fund dollars, that's a squeeze in the general fund. But when you spend federal child care development block grant funds, then that means that's a kid who does not get a family that does not get early care and learning assistance, is on a waiting list, is there's going to be a squeeze wherever the money comes from, certainly. So any other hands raised at all? Not seeing that. And so Representative Damuth, as usual, will give you the final word on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you giving this bill a hearing and the discussion that has gone on with it. I want to say thank you to the testifier, Ms. Cunningham. I know she's been with us over the years and she does have her childcare business. So we did hear little ones in the back. We need to make sure that we are supporting our family childcare providers, our childcare industry. We know that there is still money that was allocated in the special session at the end of last year for the family child care or the child care revitalization grants that we're still waiting for those appropriations. So while I agree that this is an important issue and it's something that's taken the focus of our entire state, the administration, obviously this committee, we need to actually take action with the dollars that have been allocated in continuation of going forward too. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill, and thank you, members, for considering support in the future on this.
Thank you for your work on this, and you've been at this particular piece for a number of years, Representative Damuth, so thank you so much for your work on it. So with that, the Chair does lay over House File 4593 for possible inclusion in a budget bill. I'm going to hand the gavel to Representative Pryor at this point, since the next bill up is mine.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have House File 4497. Chair Pinto, would you like to move House File 4497 to be referred to the Committee on State Government, Finance, and Elections?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. And I also believe that you do have an A1 author's amendment. And would you like to move the amendment at this time?
I would, Madam Chair, and this kind of pulls some pieces together on the bill. I can explain more as things move forward, but would appreciate members' support of the bill in this form.
All right. So, members, we have the A1 amendment before us to get the bill in the form that the author would like. So if you can unmute yourself, and we will vote on the A1. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, the amendment is adopted. All right, and Chair Pinto, would you please present your bill as amended?
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. So this bill, members, comes out of the governance report. You'll recall that we had that presentation several weeks ago regarding how early childhood programs could be how the governance of those programs could work better. And one of the things that came out of that was the recognition that there are some real IT challenges, the different computer systems not being able to talk with one another adequately. We really heard that from the Office of Legislative Audit report back in 2018 as well. And this does have an impact, this is the most important thing, on families and on kids. And I feel like that OLA report especially made that point very, very well. Not being able to track what's going on, having challenges in terms of eligibility and a number of things. And so what the bill does is directs that the IT be modernized for these programs, that there be a plan that is developed and that plan be implemented. I should note that I'm working through the degree to which a plan could be in place to be implemented, because of course it's hard to know what you're implementing before having the plan, but I do want to make sure that we really are driving forward. And in section two, to figure out whether there are challenges on data sharing that are not related to just the technology, but maybe related to administrative rules and practices and otherwise, how we can move forward on that. Members, this feels like it's the next step in good governance in these programs, which I think that all of us in both parties and all Minnesotans would want to have, that let's make sure we have good governance in these programs. I believe that Ms. Hoganson from the Children's Cabinet is available for questions, but I'm hoping that this ends up being fairly straightforward for everyone. The bill is going to be moved to state government finance, since this has to do with IT and interactions among different agencies. So with that, Madam Chair, I would be ready for members' questions.
All right. All right, Representative Juergens, you're quick this morning and awake. Yeah, we appreciate that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, it seems like every bill. Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. In reading the bill, it doesn't specify if this would be a custom-created application or if this would be contracting with a ready-made or a system that's already in place but maybe need to be tailored for Minnesota. And obviously with MNLARS not too far in the distant past and the MNSURE system, I'm a little bit gun-shy at the state of Minnesota undertaking a large development project like this, and just wondering what your goals with this bill would be.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Juergens. This is really good because you're warming me up with state government finance. So that feels like the kind of question they will, especially imagining Representative Nash asking that question. So
I think you can count on that, sir.
Yeah, I really think I can. So Representative Juergens, I'd say the bill does not make a decision either way on that point. It seems to me that our state agencies have as well presumably learned lessons of MNLARS and others in terms of just making sure that we're continuing to think through as well as possible how to do these kinds of projects. I would hate to in advance specify exactly how to do this, but would hope that they would be reporting to us, letting us know what's going on. And again, let's face it, from other situations, they're going to be expecting plenty of scrutiny about what they're doing. We do want to make sure, though, that we provide the resources and the direction for these problems to be solved. So not making any particular decision either way on this. We want to make sure to empower them and then provide the oversight the legislature has.
All right. Representative Juergens.
Good. That's good to hear. Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's good to hear, Representative Pinto. In reading the text of the bill, it doesn't specify, but it kind of seemed to lean towards development. But if that's not the intent of this, and it's open to the department to decide the best approach, I agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
And I would say, yeah, no, that was not necessarily the assumption that it would go in a particular direction. And I think I'm also not so certain that it's necessarily a new system, right? It could be that there's some, anyway, I'm out of my league in terms of talking about exactly what happens here, but I'll just note that the department is directed and may contract for services, and I certainly would expect the Minute would be heavily involved. And of course, there are states experts on this. So, but thank you again for pointing that out, Representative Juergens.
All right. Other member questions at this point? And I will step forward then with a question. Chair Pinto, as we come back to the early childhood and the early childhood aspects of it, could you talk again a little bit more about essentially the problem that we're facing right now and, you know, the different funding streams, the different data sources in the early childhood, and how this bill would start to address those?
Certainly, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'll do so real briefly because I feel like we've sort of discussed this woven throughout our committee hearings and certainly the governance report from several weeks ago. But just recognizing that, we have these multiple forms of subsidizing early care and learning, for example, that aspect of it. And you've got the child care assistance program that's linked to eligibility and programs in the Department of Human Services that support families in all kinds of ways, of which this is one. We also have early learning scholarships and preschool over the Department of Education, different eligibility. Those are, of course, administrative rules issues. But what the governance report found was that there are some real challenges. I've actually got the report next to me here, and probably can find the page to direct folks to, where they talk about how that this IT challenge kept on being brought up by the folks that they talked with throughout agencies and advocates and others, and probably would direct members' attention specifically to the report in terms of the particular need and challenge there. And I may even be able to during the vote find that page and can just make sure to direct folks. But I feel like we brought this up a number of times. But thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Any further member questions at this point? All right. Well, then, Chair, if no questions at this point, one more check. Not seeing any. Chair Pinto then renews the motion to refer House File 4497 as amended to the Committee on State Government Finance and Elections. And the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Aye.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Aye.
Lead Franzen.
No.
Representative Bennett.
No.
Representative Bolden.
Bolden, aye.
Representative Daniels.
Daniels votes no.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Representative Damuth.
No.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens, aye.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Cotiza Watoon, aye.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Loslewick.
Loslewick, aye.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
The vote results in 9 ayes and 4 nays.
Okay, you're muted, Madam Chair.
All right, now that I've just said that, Mr. Dozman, can you repeat the vote one more time?
Of course. Yeah, the vote resulted in 9 ayes and 4 nays.
All right, with a vote of 9 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails and the bill as amended is referred to the Committee on State Government Finance and Elections. And Chair Pinto will now resume the gavel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The page in the report, by the way, on the IT is page 71 of the governance report. And so certainly would encourage folks to check that out if you have questions. Anyway, so thank you for the support on that. And we're doing well on time. We have 2 more bills. Both the plan is to lay over for possible inclusion. House File 4419 is the first, and Representative Pryor, that's your bill. Moving to bring it before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
Okay, and then you have a DE2 author's amendment, and I assume you're moving that as well?
Very much so. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. And presumably, so any questions or discussion regarding that motion to get the bill in the form that Representative Pryor wishes with the DE2? Not seeing any. So all in favor of approval of the DE2 author's amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. So House File 4419 is now amended. And Representative Pryor, please present your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, let me just start by saying, this committee has heard the science. This committee has heard from parents and providers. And we know a lot about early childhood development. And one of the things that we know is that our brains develop in the context of relationships. Stable, caring relationships are essential for healthy development. And this bill establishes a competitive grant program within DHS to promote these relationships. It provides bonuses to childcare providers who, while caring for infants and toddlers in the first months of life, though the child might not remember them, these adults have a profound and lasting impact on a child's life. So we call these the brain builder bonuses. And I would like to turn to my testifier at this point, Mr. Jim Nicolai, to talk about this bill and why it's important.
And Mr. Nicolai, so glad to have you with us. And Mr. Nicolai is with a group called Elders for Infants, which I've done a lot of work with and worked with Mr. Nicolai through the years. So glad to have you with us. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jim Nicolai. I'm I've worked for over 45 years in the area of early childhood, and I've been involved with a group called Elders for Infants. Over the years, because of the achievement gap, the state has invested a great deal of money and effort in trying to close this gap. There's special programming in elementary schools, all-day kindergarten, various programs for 3 and 4-year-olds. But these efforts have had only modest success. For those of us who've worked with young children for years and have kept up with the science of brain development, the answer to the achievement gap is that we should be working to prevent the gaps from opening and look upstream. By age 3, we can identify the children who are struggling to keep up with their peers. The quality of relationships that nurture our youngest children in the first 1,000 days is a crucial aspect. And one of the characteristics of this quality of care is the continuity of the primary caregiver. So this bill is designed to focus on that and reward caregivers who are continuing in a close relationship with the infants. It's simple, straightforward, and recognizes the direct hands-on care. It's also a way to get at some of the informal caregivers, family, friend, and neighbor care, and support them with that, as well as family child care, without requiring increased rates. So the idea is to provide a bonus for caregiver teachers who provide 12 months of care in the earliest years. It could use one-time funding to test the effectiveness of this idea. So I'm open for questions about this.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nicolai. And members, we're doing well on time, so that's good. So member questions regarding this proposal. And I'll maybe just ask one to begin. This would change the retain grant program more generally. Is that correct, Representative Pryor? And I feel like I may be mistaken on that. Otherwise, I can ask Ms. Mock to help us too, but Representative Pryor.
Well, it is a new grant program. So when we looked at, when we looked for a model for how we award these grants, we looked at retain, and that was kind of, you know, a starting point, but understanding that because we are going in a new direction and there's many of the important criteria for retain that would not apply to this program, it's a new grant program.
Okay, but would still retain the retain program?
Yes, okay. It does not replace the retain program, or it's not meant to be a substitute for retain, which has its own special value to the state and care providers.
Okay, good. Members, questions the folks have? Awaiting, and let's see if we have anything. Ms. Cunningham, looks like you are muted. You had not signed up on this one, but we have the time. And so looks like you want to say something regarding it. So please, we'll give you the chance to do so, Ms. Cunningham.
Thank you. I thought I had signed up for this one also, so I apologize.
My apologies. Well, yeah, my apologies.
No, that's
okay. That wrong. You're with us now.
Who knows? We're all doing this right. So, yeah. Oh. So, again, my name is Cindy Cunningham. I'm a family child care provider in St. Paul. I'm also McPinn's public policy chairperson on our board. I fully concur with and support and appreciate Mr. Nichols and Elders for Infants. Support for infants and toddlers. They need that continuity of care of the person, not just the building. Representative Pryor approached me with this a bit ago and had some discussion with about it. And at that time, so my comments will come from our conversation. And I have had continued conversation with Representative Pryor, so I don't think anything that I'm going to say is a surprise. So I have been on the front lines with legislators over the past years, and a main focus, obviously, is to keep family child care involved and a good offer, good option, good businesses for family civic care. Our industry has declined in numbers. Basically, we have been cut in half over the last few years. And what the industry declines in half without the public paying attention. I appreciate Rep. Pryor's paying attention and attempting a solution to one of the challenges that licensed family child carers manage in our businesses, which is the ratios. Caring for infants and toddlers reduces the total number of children we can have in care, thereby automatically reducing our income. So this is a direct benefit for our businesses as time with child care providers. We either have the option to lose the income, charge a significantly higher fee, or care for less infants and toddlers. If I have three infants and toddlers, which sounds a little bit crazy, but you get good at the job, right? I lose almost $400 a week because there are two children I cannot take care of. So the current amendment includes some aspects which Representative Pryor and I discussed, which are very positive, which including the split year payments. Our concerns with the way the bill has been written, again, I have raised in a few places, that this is only CCAP client focused, limits who can be served. Yes, benefits those families, but I can say in 26 years, I think I do offer care for CCAP families, I cannot think of a time where I had a call for an infant. So family child care providers do not get a great number of CCAP, is my generalized perspective. Someone has those statistics out there somewhere. So that will greatly reduce the number of licensed family child care who would qualify and be supported, which was the intent. There's wording that is says that for the provider or work with a licensed family child care provider, understanding our industry, that's a kind of a questionable wording. We are both the business owner and the provider. And so the questions are, would both the owner and if I had an employee or an aide or a part-time person working with me, would they both receive the $5,000 or would just the program? In the future with the what's termed pod models or the special licenses, there might be a piece where a person owns the license, has a few facilities where that wording would apply potentially, but it still would need to be clarified of how this other person working in that family child care provider would apply for or get that $5,000 or how that would do. The other is the legal non-license was not in a previous conversation, so I'm going to come at it from me. Would they provide, those settings provide a very valuable role to their families and to their friends. I can say I worked full-time and part-time prior to having care. I've had full-time, part-time, and legally unlicensed care for my children. So I'm well-versed with all of those settings, including my own work. We are not on an equal playing field as far as regulations, requirements, quality, expectations, safe sleep regulations, and in all of those things. And though I respect the friends and families, I personally, and from extent, we don't see that as where the state needs to invest. Cut in half as an industry, family child care provider needs that support desperately. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. And I need to apologize to you because you absolutely had signed up before and was right in my agenda. And even as we were exchanging, even if we had that exchange, my terrific staff was flashing, big highlighting. She had signed up. I'm so glad that we got that in. And thank you. I do want to give Representative Pryor or Mr. Nicolai the chance to respond to some of the points that you made, provide any thoughts. So Representative Pryor, will go to you as the bill's author. Or to Mr. Nicolai, either way. Yeah.
Well, I'll start, and then also I think I will turn to Mr. Nicolai to hear some of his comments and some of the thinking that went behind this. But I will have to say I'm glad, Ms. Cunningham, that we were able to pack our bills together in a way that was working for you this morning, especially with your work situation, that this is not easy to participate in a public process like this and do your job at the same time. So I hope this is working for you because we truly do respect and value the comments that you have to make. And I'm so glad that also that you that you outlined for and reminded the committee of how difficult it is to afford to take care of infants and toddlers. I mean, the way that the way the world works is that it is more labor intensive to take care of infants and toddlers. And we really don't have a compensation in place that recognize how labor intensive that is. So appreciate that you brought forward those ratios and how it works into the business of a childcare business, taking care of infants and toddlers. A couple points. So there are things that are in this bill that are places that we're starting, but I think that we can develop and discuss the idea of the child care assistance and making those families eligible. It's a way of saying, hey, this is kind of a means tested program. There's never enough money to go around. So where do we start? And to start with the families that are the most at risk, most at need, families that are, you know, struggling in the lower incomes, those kids, to make them the priority. But if it's not workable for getting out to childcare, licensed childcare homes that way, then, you know, it's something that we could definitely take a look at to see how we might make that work better, knowing that we want to put the families most at risk first and the most at need first for this kind of high quality care and rewarding this high quality care. And then also about workers within a family childcare situation. Again, this is just something that we wanted to be inclusive of how that worked. We can probably improve the wording on that. So appreciate the feedback on those two aspects. And I turn also, Mr. Chair, to my testifier, Mr. Nicolai, for the
comment. Yeah, thank you. Let's do that, Mr. Nicolai. If you have any thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of a pilot type of a program. It's not meant to cover the whole water, but it's trying to increase the continuity of care for kids and reduce the achievement gap. So we're really looking at serving kids and providers who are in family child care. Maybe it's an individual family child care person who provides this 12 months of continuity, then that would go to that provider. If it's a larger family child care home that has a helper, then one or the other would be the primary caregiver of the infant. So it's really trying to support a primary care model. If it's legally unlicensed, we have a system now that provides for the possibility of legally unlicensed care for in CCAP. And so we're piggybacking on that. We're really trying to get at these forms of care that are most informal and most difficult to support. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you, Mr. Nicolai, for those comments. So just looking to see if there's any other member questions or comments. Not seeing hands up. I hope in our committee we especially are aware of just the importance of the of those earliest years. We're obviously early childhood, but then the early years are just so critical. So appreciate this idea. So Representative Pryor, I'm not seeing other hands, so you get the last word.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, I hope that we can have present in our mind families that are out there right now struggling to find care situations where the essential relationship between the child and the primary care provider can be established and nurtured, and that we can have that continuity. And parents are trying to get to work right now after the birth of the child. Finding that care situation is difficult. And these grants would help those essential workers, those frontline workers that accept the responsibility of providing brain building care in these first essential years. So that's the goal of the program. Hope that we can have it under consideration.
Thank you so much, Representative Pryor, and a great idea. And so with that, the chair lays over House File 4418 as amended for possible inclusion in our committee's budget bill. Thank you. And then one final bill, pardon me, House File 4419, that is. So thank you so much, Mr. Nicolai, for your work as well, for being with us. So then finally, House File 4418. Representative Pryor, you move to have that bill be brought before the committee, I assume?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 4418.
Okay, and then you have an A1 author's amendment, and you're moving that as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. See if there are any questions regarding the A1 author's amendment, just to put in the form that Representative Pryor wishes. Not hearing any, all in favor of approval of the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so that motion passes, and the bill is now in the form you wish, Representative Pryor. And so please, if you can describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 4418, we're referring to it as the true cost of quality. And currently, we set child care assistant reimbursement rates using a market survey approach. And market rates are what parents can afford to pay for childcare. But it's not necessarily saying what the cost of quality childcare is. And what we have and what we've looked at, in meeting after meeting, bill after bill, is we know that this reimbursement system of using market rates, it's a broken system. We're burdening parents. An average family with two young children spends 31% of their annual income on childcare. And I guess that's not any surprise when we know that there's declining birth rates when you're spending 31% of your income on childcare costs. We also know that shortchanging kids is not an option. It is imperative that young children receive high quality care so that they can get the best start in life. An opportunity gap here predicts all the future achievement gaps. We pay for these early opportunity gaps in the K-12 systems. We pay for it through lower adult wages, and we pay for it in higher healthcare costs. We also know that the current market rates fall short of paying early childhood educators competitive wages, even living wages. Approximately one third of early childhood workers receive public support. And when we're talking about public support, it's benefits such as Medicaid and SNAP. And this is at a cost of about $43 million per year. So understand then that we currently are stabilizing the childcare workforce by $43 million through public assistance programs. So this bill is saying we should do better and we can do it differently. Instead of using the market survey as a way of as a basis for reimbursement rate, we can use the true quality of the cost of quality as the basis of our rates. And if we did use, what if our reimbursement rates paid workers according to the true value of their work? And what if childcare businesses were reimbursed according to the true cost of quality care? So Minnesota is not the only state right now that uses the market rate. But there is work and a movement right now to use this other system. And one place that it's been done is in Washington, D.C. And there is a report from D.C. about their what they call the modeling the cost of childcare in the District of Columbia. And they had a number of findings in the report. First of all, they found that the care for infants and toddlers is the most financially challenging type of program to operate without increased financial resources and other cost efficiency supports. They also found that in most cases, a provider's estimated cost of delivering early care and education services exceeded the revenue generally available to provide care at different levels of quality. And another finding is that centers and homes that are not fully enrolled continue to experience significant revenue losses, confirming that maintaining nearly full employment is critical to providers' financial stability. The District of Columbia used the results of their cost estimation models to inform their fiscal year 19 reimbursement rates for subsidized child care. And they have shared that they increased the recent reimbursement rates for fiscal year 2019. And these rates were increased to children of all ages in all settings. So what this bill would do would direct DHS to work with stakeholders to create a cost estimation model for providing early care and learning. And this cost estimation model would address variations in costs related to quality of care, geographic area, provider type, child age, whether provider cares for children with disabilities alongside other children without disabilities, compensation and benefits, fixed costs, operating expenses, and hours of operation. And the second aspect of this bill is that it directs DHS to work with stakeholders to look at child care provider wage scale to ensure that provider wages are equivalent to elementary school educators with similar credentials and experience. In other words, what's a fair wage and a competitive wage? And these wage scales must also incentivize providers and staff to increase childcare related qualifications, incorporate payments towards benefits, and account for the different business structures of different types of childcare providers. So that's a little bit of an overview of where we stand on this, the true cost of quality, and I stand open for questions.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. This is our final bill, so you got a couple extra minutes. So Representative Bennett, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a question for Representative Pryor. Representative Pryor, I sit on a task force, a governor's task force, the Great Start for All Minnesota Children, and that was established in 2021, I believe. And that was established to identify a cost financing structure for early childhood care. It's very similar to what you have here. And for workforce compensation. So it just seems to duplicate the work of the task force. And I'm wondering if you can comment on that. We would have two separate groups working on the same thing with different deadlines, and it seems like a duplicate effort here.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one thing you'll notice in this bill, in the amendment, it takes a long time to establish one of these programs. And so this is starting this process now. It's not committing Minnesota to using this model, but it is requiring that DHS start the work for gathering the data. And then at that point, as we merge the different committees and what's happening, that data can be then used by any group that's working on this issue. So the Great Start Task Force is one of the stakeholders that can be involved in this.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I'm a little confused because I believe the task force will be finished up by the end of this year. And I'm wondering why we would spend money to create another study after this study has already been done. That doesn't make sense to me to spend money on this when there's already a group already it's being worked on, so, and will most likely be finished well before this effort gets started.
One thing I'd like to do, if I can just step in real quick, Representative Bennett, is just if I can get clarification. I guess I didn't think the Great Start Task Force would complete its work by the end of this year, but I may be wrong. If we can have, I don't know if there's someone who's on agency staff, and Representative Bennett, you're on the task force, you may know, I think Representative Bolden's on, or agency staff. I had kind of thought that it was a longer term than ending end of this calendar year. Representative Bennett, I'll send back to you if you want to ask something further on that, but I just want to clarify that point first, if we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I may be wrong on that. Is there somebody here who might?
Yeah, I feel like there's a number of folks who are on with us to answer questions. Let's see if anybody can do that. I don't want to put, Ms. Mock may not have it right at hand, but I guess I thought we had some folks from DHS who may know, but they may not because this has been more run through the Children's Cabinet. Well, Ms. Sommerfeld, we'll see if you can give it a try. Do you happen to have the answer to that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have that handy,
okay.
But I'm checking with some folks on the Children's Cabinet and we'll let you know.
Thank you so much. And I suspect Ms. Mock has maybe taken a look at it too. So if anybody happens to get it, please just unmute and show your screen. But I believe that it's a longer term thing than that, Representative Bennett. I guess it had been my understanding, and hold on a second, I'm getting a note here that's directing me that in fact the task force has to submit its recommendations by next February. So I guess actually it is tighter than I had thought, Representative Bennett, that the plan is they have to do it by early next year. So a little bit longer than you'd said, but pretty darn close. So at least we have that. And I guess my understanding was that this could then serve to be really complementary to the task force work, because if we have to wait till February and then they say we need a cost estimation model, well, now we've lost another year. So that this would be something that could start this cost estimation work now, so that it would be ready to be available next year. I'll let Representative Bennett, it was your question, which I've sort of hijacked. So I'll send back to you first, and then we'll see if Representative Pryor has anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps the timeline is not the issue here as much as just the duplicate effort and spending money on something that's already being done. It just seems like a waste of money to me, and we might be better off letting that task force do its work, and which will kind of be finished up at the end of this year, and then that report will come out in February. It seems like a waste of money to me to spend spend money on that when it's already being done. So I'll end there, Mr. Chair. It's just a...
Thank you for pointing that out, Representative Bennett. Yeah, and what I'm inclined to do is go to Representative Bolden, I think, who is also with you on the task force. And Representative Pryor, I'll certainly circle back to you before we're done. But Representative Bolden, and we've got just a couple minutes here, but Representative Bolden.
Yeah, I'll be quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to chime in as also a member of that task force. And thank you for getting that information. I was looking quickly to try to find the dates that our report was due. So glad I couldn't get there quick enough. But I guess I would just say I sort of view this similar as how you spoke about it, Mr. Chair. I think this work probably dovetailed nicely. I think, you know, the work of the task force is to look at sort of best practices, and we will make recommendations for what we see in terms of, you know, compensation and affordability and access for families. But I view, I guess, Rep. Pryor's bill a little bit differently as doing some of that legwork, looking at some of the, more of that information that I think would help the task force if that is something that we would decide would be, you know, part of our recommendation. So I guess I see those two things as fitting together fairly nicely, but appreciate the good conversation. It's certainly something to think about and talk about.
Yeah, and I would really urge, I'll go to Representative Pryor for last word, and I'll maybe urge her to look into this. I don't think the task force is doing this kind of cost estimation modeling, so this then is something that we can be doing that then is available for use. But I'd urge you, Representative Pryor, to look into this further before we would possibly move this forward in our budget bill. But final word to you, Representative Pryor.
Well, I mean, this is a great discussion and a great issue to pursue and make sure that we are not duplicating efforts. We come back to where we know we are, which is our current marking system is a broken system. And we need to start that process of creating a better system that reimburses for the true cost of quality care.
Thank you so much. And with that, the chair lays over House File 4418 as amended for possible inclusion in a committee budget bill. I do want to take our final 120 seconds here to just lay out the next 2 weeks, because we have a lot going on as a committee. We have now posted the committee's my proposal to the committee for a pre-K budget bill. Pre-K budget provisions. The plan is for us to hear that bill on Thursday, consider any amendments. I will note that it's very similar to the administration's proposal that we just walked through. I think it was last Thursday or last week. That will come up this Thursday. And then we will pass that to the Education Finance Committee for their consideration in their budget bill the following week. On Friday, we have our joint hearing with the Public Safety Committee, and so I'm excited about that. That'll be at 10:30 a.m. this Friday. I would expect that by Monday, there would be the proposed budget for the rest of our budget that would be posted by Monday the 4th, a walkthrough of that on Tuesday the 5th, and then I'm expecting that we'll have And then testimony, I guess also on the 5th, I believe the plan is to have some informational hearings on some proposals that aren't in our committee's jurisdiction, but that relate to them. So there's a proposal for a childcare funding in Luverne, Minnesota, and a number of other proposals there. Received testimony on the budget proposal on Wednesday at our usual committee time, and then consider amendments, mark up the bill, and vote that out on Thursday to Ways and Means, and then it'll be broken up from there. So I see we've got a couple questions. We'll squeeze them in. So Representative Bennett, you came up first.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this came to my mind, but do we have a target yet for this committee?
No target's been made public. What I do know is the plan. So that's one reason that the budget bill can't be out till next week, because we gotta have the numbers to be able to use to put together the bill. But I will note that what I do know is that we're going to be pushing and hoping, expecting that the pre-K portion that we're sending to Education Finance, then we'll move on from there. But beyond that, no, I'm still waiting for full and final direction about what we can do. And then we'll make the proposal to the committee and consider from there. And I'm hoping that will be out very soon, but that's where we're at. So, and then Representative Juergens, you had your hand raised, so it looks like it went back down.
Yeah, it was the same question, Mr. Chair, thanks.
You are, great minds are thinking alike there. Okay, so thank you so much, members. Please feel free to be in touch. Again, I think that's 6 hearings in 2 weeks, which is, you know, a 50% increase over what we usually do. So thank you for your work and patience, and have a great day, and I look forward to seeing you on Thursday. With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.